performing artists, and spoken word poets. The 14th annual Tribute to the Ancestors of the Middle Passage is taking place on Saturday, June 14th, from noon to sunset on the Coney Island Boardwalk at West 16th Street in Brooklyn. A special tribute will be made to World Cultural Ambassador Dr. Babatunde Olatunji. Bring flowers for the ancestral offering and drums to give praise. For more information, call 718-270-4902. That's 718-270-4902.
Radical Women are sponsoring two events next week. The Legacy of Pat Parker, a Black lesbian revolutionary feminist poet, will be celebrated on Wednesday, June 18th at 7:30 p.m. And on Saturday, June 21st at 8 p.m., the Bread is Rising Poetry Collective will perform The Church of the Living Dollar, a provocative one-act play by Carlos Raul Duflar about union organizing in the workplace. Both events will take place at Freedom Hall, 113 West 128th Street between Malcolm X and Adam Clayton Powell Jr. Boulevards in Harlem. There is a modest admission fee. For information and directions, call 212-222-0633. That's 212-222-0633.
Come to the Justice for Youth Coalition's Jail Free 2003 Street Fair to remember the young people who have been separated from their families by the system of incarceration. There'll be a DJ, prizes, an open mic, and hip-hop performances, and it's all happening on Saturday, June 14th, from 2 to 6 p.m. at 489-93 East 153rd Street in the Bronx. For more information, call 718-260-8805. That's 718-260-8805.
The New York U.S.-Cuba Friendship Committee's Human Rights Film Festival will show two films documenting people's resistance to U.S. aggression on Thursday, June 19th. A World Beneath the War, The Secret Tunnels of Vietnam, and Hijos de Bolivar, about the use of community media and the grassroots struggle in the aftermath of the April 2002 coup in Venezuela. Both will be followed by discussion. On Thursday, June 26th, there will be a showing of Missing, about a father's search for his son, who was disappeared following the 1973 military coup in Chile. All showings begin at 7 p.m. and will take place at Hostos College, Building C, 460 Grand Concourse, Room 319. Donations will be gratefully accepted. For more information, call 212-926-5757. That's 212-926-5757.
This has been a list of events from the WBAI Community Bulletin Board.
Let us know what's going on in your community. You can post your event on the community events calendar at www.wbai.org or send an email to cvb@wbai.org.
Or you can fax us at 212-747-1698. That's 212-747-1698.
Or write to us at WBAI, 120 Wall Street, 10th floor, New York, New York, 10005. Whichever way you get in touch with us, be sure to include a contact phone number and allow 2 weeks lead time. I'm Vajra Kilgour.
I'm Victor Takeall.
Have a great day.
Across the lines, who would dare to go under the bridge, over the track, separates wires from life.
And good morning once again. You're listening to Wake Up Call, WBAI in New York. I'm Leslie George with the news. Interpress Service is reporting that the Pentagon is moving at a seemingly breakneck speed to redeploy U.S. forces and equipment around the world in ways that will permit Washington to play Globo Cop. The article, based on a number of statements by top officials and defense planners, says that while U.S. military planners are reducing forces in Germany, Turkey, and Saudi Arabia, they're talking about establishing semi-permanent or permanent bases along a giant swath of global territory, from the Caribbean basin through Africa to South and Central Asia and across to North Korea. The latest details disclosed by the Wall Street Journal on Tuesday include plans to increase U.S. forces on the Horn of Africa across the Red Sea from Yemen, set up semi-permanent bases in Algeria, Morocco, and possibly Tunisia, and establish smaller facilities in Senegal, Ghana, and Mali. that could be used to intervene in oil-rich West African countries, especially Nigeria. These plans represent a major triumph for Deputy Defense Secretary Paul Wolfowitz, who 12 years ago argued for realigning U.S. forces globally so that U.S. military intervention could become a, quote, constant fixture of the New World Order. Cuba's government has called for hundreds of thousands of people to protest outside the Spanish and Italian embassies today after accusing the European Union of aligning itself with the United States and the island's dissidents. Yesterday, Cuba's foreign minister accused the Spanish government of funding dissident groups that Spain is trying to organize in Cuba. The foreign minister also criticized the Italian embassy for eliminating several cultural and cooperation programs. The government says as many as 1 million Cubans are expected at the protests today. Kia Lavoie Johnson was executed by lethal injection in Texas yesterday. He is the 16th man to be executed in that state so far this year. Johnson's lawyers contend the 38-year-old, who was convicted for killing a store employee during a robbery, was mentally retarded. But lower courts rejected his appeals. And late yesterday afternoon, the U.S. Supreme Court, which has barred execution of the mentally retarded, refused to delay his execution. 32 female employees at the U.S. Mint in Denver filed a complaint this month that workers were pressured to have sex with managers and denied raises and promotions. The U.S. government began an investigation into the allegations yesterday. The female employees allege that women were subjected to sexist comments and pornography, treated more favorably if they had sex with some managers, and disciplined more harshly than men. The complaint does not seek punitive damages. The women want to stop discrimination and are seeking changes in how the Mint handles complaints. The Denver Mint employs 528 people, 107 of them women. It holds nearly $20 billion in gold, about one quarter of the nation's reserves. John Wesley Cox, a civil rights activist who was instrumental in the peaceful integration of Atlanta schools, died Friday of complications after surgery. He was 73. Cox exerted leadership from two fronts, first as executive director of the Butler Street YMCA, a gathering place for black leaders and progressive whites in the 1950s, and later as vice president for community relations at Delta Airlines. For many years, Cox coordinated Martin Luther King Jr. holiday celebrations in Atlanta. Cox also served on the King Center's board of directors. The Texas district attorney who prosecuted many of the now discredited 1999 Tulia drug arrests was found guilty of drunken driving and sentenced to 2 days in jail. The verdict in a New Mexico court brings into question the professional future of District Attorney Terry McEachern. McEachern has denied wrongdoing in the racially charged Tulia drug cases. But Judge, 38 people, most of them black, were convicted after an undercover drug sting operation in the predominantly white town of Tulia in 1999. Convictions were based largely on the testimony of former undercover police officer Tom Coleman. McEachern, Coleman, and Sheriff Larry Stewart have all denied allegations of racial bias. But in early April, a judge presiding over hearings for four of the defendants announced that he was recommending that the convictions of all 38 be overturned. Of the 14 still imprisoned, 13 are to go free on Monday. The 14th has a separate appeal pending. And finally, the American Civil Liberties Union in Utah says people want to sue Salt Lake City over a decision to give up a sidewalk area through the Mormon Church-owned downtown plaza in exchange for a community center in a low-income area. The swap would allow the church to prohibit smoking, sunbathing, bicycling, so-called offensive language, dress, or conduct on the plaza. It also would allow the church to ban any preaching it did not approve of. Utah ACLU Executive Director Danny Iyer said yesterday the organization is looking at how this agreement was reached. The deal would allow the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints to control access and behavior on the downtown block of Main Street that it purchased from the city in 1999. And that's some of the news at this hour. It's about 69 degrees, going up to 78 today. I'm Leslie George.
And this is Wake Up Call.
Deaths of Alberto Sproul and Usman Zanda demand that changes be made now in the policing policies of the New York City Police Department. Join the Justice Coalition for Alberto Sproul and Usman Zanda in a massive rally at City Hall Park on Saturday, June 21st at 11 a.m. If you care, you'll be there. City Hall, Saturday, June 21st, 11 a.m. For more information, call 212-234-6767. Again, that's 212-234-6767. Go!
This is Wake Up Call on WBAI in New York, and Leslie was speaking about a couple of stories that touch on us here at Wake Up Call, Utah. The place of cultural desolation to which our intrepid engineer, Errol Maitland, is en route for the Grassroots Radio Conference. And I myself am en route to Tulia, Texas, to cover the release of the last of those imprisoned there in a way that only Wake Up Call can do. And these are times as fertile in historical and cultural significance as what we've been addressing that occurred some 40 years ago. I'm Robert Knight here with Sharan Harper.
If I only had a microphone.
Thank you. We have, I just want to say one thing.
Mm-hmm.
For you and Errol.
Yes.
You better bring me back something more than you did the last time.
Well, it was a beautiful tan. I remember. Well, we are celebrating many things this morning. Among them, not celebrating, but I guess commemorating the magnificent and brave transition of Medgar Evers.
Yes.
And also the process of excruciating liberation of Nelson Mandela. There are a couple of events that, before we go on to things that are coming up in the remainder of the program, a couple of events taking place. Judson Church, of course, there is the conference on peace that's taking place this weekend.
That's tomorrow night at the Judson Memorial Church. We're going to be looking at Revolution in the Future of the Peace Movement, an evening of discussion with Kathleen Cleaver, Brian Flanagan, Kathy Wilkerson, Frank Morales, Suzanne Hamad, Yvonne Liu, and Louisa Solomon. But tonight at Judson Memorial Church, you're going to be there after the showing
of
the Panama Deception. Yes, this is your reminder. Don't forget, you have to
That's
be there
for
you and Hilma Camargo, human rights lawyer, will be there for discussion of the Panama Deception. The Judson Memorial Church is located at 55 Washington Square South. That's at Thompson and Sullivan. And this event tomorrow night is free and open to the public. Tonight is donation. As for the New York Cuba Friendship Group, there is a fundraiser, whatever you can give.
All right.
Also, this weekend on Saturday, we're going to be looking at what's going on with the October 22nd Coalition Project Reach, 1 Orchard Street between Canal and Division Streets at 4 o'clock p.m., looking at killing and harassing of people by police and why. So there's going to be a wrap session around that event. We have the all-day conference at the New York Academy of Medicine, 103rd Street and 5th Avenue, all day on Saturday, beginning at 8:45 a.m. that looks at the health effects of depleted uranium. For more information, you can go to www.nyam.org. And we're going to hear a little later about something else that's happening Saturday, some young people, the No Police State Coalition. So we got a lot of stuff going on. The book signing at 4W Circle in Brooklyn, 708 Fulton Street. That takes place at 6 p.m. tomorrow.
Well, that's Sharan Harper, our own living palm pilot and reminder of all of the events taking place. This is Wake Up Call on WBAI New York. that from a Manma selection celebrating Nelson Mandela. And we have had quite a satisfying, if painful, but also liberating and inspiring romp through history this week on Wake Up Call. Tune in tomorrow when Mario Murillo will be hosting, as he does on Fridays, on the premier morning program on all of New York radio at the most important radio station in the United States, WBAI New York, which this is, Peace and Justice Radio, broadcasting at 99.5. It's part of the Pacifica Radio Network. My name is Robert Knight, here with Sharon Harper, and Dred Scott Keyes manning the keyboards of the electronic broadcast in the place of Errol Maitland, who is on assignment as we circumlocute. And Pacifica is an American institution founded at the end of the Second World War to pursue peace and examine the differences among communities, to maintain an independent base and community, and some would say to optimize and not necessarily maximize the audience, because then we'd be WABC or something like that. And as an innovator of cultural thoughts and trends, sometimes some things will necessarily be minority enterprises. Pacifica being an American institution, it is no less tempted to the racism that characterizes every aspect of a post-colonial, post-slavery society. And it is to the benefit of Pacifica that people struggle over these issues, which is why we are proud to present this special discussion to conclude most of the remainder of this morning's edition of Wake Up Call with the WBAI Local Advisory Board. And there are many important issues about inclusion and about the maintenance of mission of Pacifica. And we're joined by quite a number of board members, and in introducing them, Ray LaForest is here in the studio with some others on the phone. I will just conclude my remarks for this morning by noting that the volatile issue of diversity and inclusion is very important for us to discuss clearly, because to put it in a word, being colored does not make you right, but the absence of color does make you wrong. I'm Robert Knight for Wake Up Call. Here's Ray LaForest.
Good morning.
Good morning, Ray. We're here with Ray LaForest from the Local Advisory Board. Ray is also a member of the Interim National Board of Pacifica, and you're one of the chairs of the bylaws committee here in New York. Is that correct?
Actually, the bylaws committee no longer functions as such, but there's a diversity language committee that I chair.
The diversity language.
Yes.
We're also joined on the line by Gail Golden, who is a member of the Local Advisory Board. Good morning. I shall turn the floor over to the Local Advisory Board.
Well, Miguel Maldonado, chair of the lab, was supposed to be here this morning. I'm not too sure what happened, and he normally would be the one with the agenda for the time we're going to spend with you. So maybe we can start. Good morning, Gail.
Good morning. How are you?
Maybe we can start by updating our listeners as to what happened during the last local advisory board meeting. Would you do that, Gail?
Good. At the last local advisory board meeting, the overwhelming majority, if not the virtual majority, of everybody present at that meeting unanimously confirmed our support for maximal inclusion and in the principles of affirmative action in all of Pacifica's work that would relate to elections, to programming, to hiring of staff. You know, this seemingly simple notion has in some ways been under assault throughout the rest of the country, and I think the WBAI lab has been characterized as being obstructionist and difficult and inconsiderate of the process, but in fact, I am very proud to be part of this particular group because this group continues to hold strongly to a vision of a station that creates a place for representation from every community that is part of our listening audience. And while that is not easy to do in the current political and legal climate, we have really made a commitment to do everything possible to come as close to that goal as we can. And Ray can really talk about some of the specifics.
Well, other things we dealt with, although clearly these issues of new language within the bylaws and particularly diversity, meaning reaching out to those who have been excluded, even within Pacifica. Because unfortunately, and maybe predictably so, Pacifica to some extent reflects the community at large. The local advisory board took a vote again to strongly support the efforts of the station to do as efficient as an outreach program as possible, and congratulated them for setting it up in such a fashion. Ursula Rudenberg and Bo Kim Nyeri are both individuals in charge of this program. And obviously, by status and by predilection, the local advisory board it is very supportive and it should play a major role in bringing new listeners. Also, other issues that took place were discussion of some of what Gail referred to earlier, which is to some extent a demonization of the local advisory board, the WBI local board, by other individuals or groups who have decided that the reason why we differ sometimes is because we're doing it for self-interest and self-serving causes. But this is a political fight, and as such, individuals will take positions that are based on their own interest. And like every other fight, every political fight historically, and this has been seen in the American Revolution, it can be seen every day, people will go only as far as their interest, in general anyway, people will go as far as their interest are endangered. And they will either stop struggling or even oppose once the fight. So to me, the race issue is a major aspect of it. Even though in this case, when we talk about diversity, we clearly are talking diversity in a much broader sense. We're talking about inclusion of people of color. And in this city, that means Afro-Americans, Latinos, Asians, and many others. It means people who have been excluded because of physical limitations, what they used to call disabilities. Certainly women need a stronger voice, even WBAI. And the voice should be present not only... as we say in within Haitian political context, the voice should be there at the table from the very inception, at the very conception of what the solutions are. Otherwise, we're talking about at best as a magnanimous attitude, patrician type of attitude, where we determine that we know better than others what's good for them. Do you want to add anything in terms of the dynamics? For example, I know there's a report that came out yesterday. It's a call to action signed by many well-known individuals within the Pacifica.
For some reason, I did not see that or get that. I heard about it, but I have not seen it.
Yes, I'm going to say that you could say that at two polls, you would find KPFA, which is the local advisory board, and local station of Berkeley and BAI being at the other extreme. Now, of course, within those polls, there are individuals on both sides who support different positions. But I believe that the issue could be narrowed to a notion as to whether a nominally democratic process is enough to guarantee, to ensure participation and therefore survival. Because one of the points that we have here at WBAI is that it's not just that it is fair to include everybody, but that is the way to survive, to thrive, and to grow. And we have been given a chance, it's like I say in Chinese, The term for crisis is also the same one for opportunity. And this latest crisis has given us a chance to, has forced us, in fact, to take a look at the institution that we've been headed down, at a valuable, invaluable institution, priceless, particularly in these days of Bush reaction, to strengthen as one of the most important tools available to working people, to progressive people, to people of color, to women, to those who have been excluded from society at large. And so this tool cannot be allowed to be lost or to not to function properly. And that is the essence of the debate. Gail, you want to maybe add what the role of the lab might be in the coming months?
Well, again, I think, you know, the WBAI lab is holding out for a vision of maximal inclusion. You know, other stations and other persons in the Pacifica community have aligned themselves with systems of election which at first glance would seem to be good enough. You know, they will account for 50% women, for 50% people of color. But the WBAI lab really is committed to be much more specific than that in terms of inclusiveness. The proportional representation system, which I believe has been used in Berkeley, resulted in a local advisory board which had no Asian representation in a community which is 30% Asian. This is the kind of thing that we are holding out in many ways and trying to craft language so that we would not have that kind of situation. We are looking to include people of regardless of sexual orientation. We want LGBT representation. We want representation from the community of prisoners, from disabled people, from young people, from the elderly community, in addition to many of the different ethnic groups that Ray has already mentioned. So it's a mighty task, but it's, again, one that we feel is so important and so vital to the mission of Pacifica, that it is worth taking the time to work this through.
Yes, indeed. And we've been accused of being partisans, and we are partisans. And we're partisans for what we believe are progressive, a progressive structure. And I would personally would grant that this is a difficult issue, that when you're trying to resolve a difficult situation, you don't have ideal parameters. You have to start with what you have. And what we have right now is the lack of participation, inclusion of many groups. And the government itself, with all its limitations, has admitted that affirmative action or some form of it is necessary to make up for past loss. And similarly here, what we want is a structure, and we've been very, I believe, very proactive and imaginative. At first, the ideas that were bounced were very familiar ideas to people who follow affirmative action, meaning that somebody receiving less vote than another individual from a more, you know, favored group would, you know, if you want, bump that individual. Instead, we've come up with a situation where we would expand the board by up to 5 individuals, and only if the desired results are not achieved, and the desired results are not taken out of box. That's why, at this point, the notion of 50% has been abandoned. We would use demographics, using official government data, and organizations and institutions that are progressive and that can be trusted. And again, we've been taken to task. I was looking at that document I referred to called Call to Action for not using tools that are precise enough. Well, we're building. It's like in a revolution, you drive something by the seat of your pants. And we can do that without being reckless. And so what we're suggesting is that up to five individuals be added to a board that would compensate for lack of presence. And if indeed, and we do agree that that outreach is a major form of inclusion, but also Another very important is programming, and this you cannot make up for overnight. And that is the, to some extent, some of the cause of the problem is that without proper programming to bring in those communities, it will take a while to do so. So therefore, we have to compensate it before the election coming up. So I would say that we would call on all listeners to participate in this process, to support WBAI as a vital institution, and follow these discussions, and be official members of the station by contributing to the stations either with their time or with their money, and be able to vote and have their voice heard. Gail?
Yes, and I think that the notion of trying to follow the demographics seems a reasonable and rational notion. Although, again, many people are concerned about it and can't quite figure out how that would work without over-favoring some people and under-favoring others. But, again, I think that we have a vision here of including as many groups of listeners as we possibly can in terms of representation. And, of course, as Ray said, that needs to also be reflected in programming. But I think that the Diversity Language Committee, with Ray as the chair, is to be commended enormously for a very difficult and painstaking job of trying to work through a system of election which will not put us in legal difficulty, as some people are concerned about. We have been getting some legal counsel, and this plan seems to be passing people's scrutiny.
Yeah, well, one of the clear problems that I have with the people on the other side, you could say, is that those who are supporting the so-called Plan B, which is a plan that was voted for by the national board in last December, before the diversity committee was formed to really grapple with this issue. But by the way, I must say, in malign us, that they've said that WBAI is too influential, that this is a so-called Unity Caucus, which is one of the groups in New York pushing for change. It's a Unity Caucus committee. It is outrageous, because when you look at it, almost every single local advisory board president or chair is part of that committee, including and also the committee includes three voting national board members and two other board members, actually four voting national board members and two others who have non-national board members who have non-voting status. So this is clear. And some of the strong point of the so-called B, draft B, is the what is called STV, which is a proportional representation with single transferable vote being allowed. So that basically, to summarize it, I would say that what it allows, what it prevents, is a domination of a body by a majority, meaning that if you had, in a normal circumstance, once you have 51%, this group can control every aspect of an organization, whereas in this case, it will truly be proportional, with limitations, I would say, but it will be proportional in the sense that about a third of the electorate would be able to elect about a third of the representatives and so on. However, this is a go far enough, because as I said earlier, if you don't have outreach, these groups that we're trying to bring in will not be there present, and the majority of those voting would have to assume would vote for people who are different from themselves. And we hope that people would do that, and we're confident to some extent that many people will do so. However, from that position to what we want to achieve, there's still a tremendous gap that can only be closed by ensuring within the law. And you just mentioned that, Gail, that we had legal advice. We had competent legal advice from Jonathan Lubell, who's an attorney from New Jersey, with long experience in the civil rights and First Amendment law, that said that this was indeed an imaginative way, that this is, we know that Pacifica, WBA's role has been to push the envelope, not just to accept the status quo and accept that reality. If I was living in the South when Dr. King and his group was getting mobilized, if somebody told me, you know, there's a guy King who's questioning the system, is questioning the fact that blacks are being treated as subhuman and are denied the right to vote, to equal pay, to have a voice, to be elected, or to even vote. If somebody would tell me, well, can you guarantee before I go that I will not get arrested, that I will not rough up? No, I cannot guarantee. If you tell me, are you going there to get arrested, like they're suggesting we're going there to get sued so we can make a case? No, I'm not going there to get arrested. What I'm going to do is to stop a situation that is untenable, that is more important than a change whose reality would be more important than the risk that I'm taking. And that's what we're trying to do now. Gail?
Yes, and this is, again, Robert was saying before that, you know, Pacifica and BAI particularly is in the vanguard, as you say, Ray, pushing the envelope. You know, sometimes we diverge greatly from the majority viewpoint and, you know, pursue a vision of something different. And in this particular instance, again, we have a vision that we feel is important not only for Pacifica and BAI, but, you know, really represents a vision for the ultimate health of this country, because without representation from everybody, you know, we will continue to make the painful and tragic mistakes that we have made for centuries. So if anything is worth fighting for, and if anything is worth taking some extra time to craft, you know, to me it seems that pursuing this vision is enormously valuable. And as Ray says, you know, none of us are looking to create legal difficulties, which is why we are consulting with counsel, and, you know, why the Diversity Language Committee has taken such careful pains to craft an idea and to craft language that hopefully will not put us in difficulty. But, you know, if this puts us in a situation where we are challenging something unjust, it would not be the first time that Pacifica has done that.
Yeah, I should say that you are listening to WBAI 99.5 FM. You're listening to a special program that happens monthly of the local advisory board of this station. My name is Wella Forrest. I'm a member of the lab, and with me on the phone is Gail Golden, who's also a member of the lab.
Yes.
And we're discussing some of the very important issues that the lab is grappling with, including outreach and bring inclusion, maximal inclusion, to the system without facing undue reaction from the judiciary and political clique that controls this country these days.
Yes.
We don't have too much time left. I'd like to say that in defense, again, of the work that we've done, and in a way I'm sorry that Miguel is not here.
Yes.
Because I don't necessarily want to play both roles and have to measure some of what I say, because there's nobody else to present the other side. And I do not want to prevent the other side from having the voice heard. But I would say something that one criticism that I have of the other side is that particularly the KPFA lab, local advisory board, and the KPFK lab, which have voted to support Plan B with all its limitations, is that they have done so even before hearing from legal counsel in a formal way. And some of them have gone as far as saying that, and some of them have called for people to oppose the committee's work, no matter what the result was. And as I said earlier, the committee has national board members for every listening area and two board members who have non-voting status. One of them is Janice K. Bryan from New York City, and I'm the other person from New York, and Bert Lee from Washington, D.C., who's also non-voting. And we have lab chairs and community, very active community individuals and very concerned individuals. To dismiss the product of that work even before it comes out is highly biased, I would say.
Yes, and I am also sorry Miguel is not here, because, you know, I know that people have many concerns and many questions about the plan that has emerged from the Diversity Language Committee. But again, it seems so vital to me that people really stretch their imagination and look at the plan carefully, consider it carefully, and really think through what it means to bring everyone to the table, which is so far beyond 50% this and 50% that. It's, you know, really a much more refined and imaginative vision of what we can be.
Gail, since Miguel is not here, maybe we have a few more minutes. Maybe, how do you feel about taking a few calls?
Yes.
What's the number here again?
212-209-2900. Okay, hold on just one moment. We'll be taking calls. Okay. You're on the air.
Good morning. This is Carol Taylor, the president of the Institute for, quote, Interracial, end quote, Harmony Incorporated.
Good morning, Carol.
How are you? You're speaking about very serious issues, and it occurs to me, I have a question, but it occurs to me that you have in common a problem not only with the U.S. government and its University of Michigan affirmative action mess, but also the New York City and other police departments, which are also involved with, although they don't seem to realize it too much, involved with this issue of colorism, which I call colorism, we call colorism. I wanted to ask Ray LaForest, hello, my brother.
Hi, Lodi.
What does actually the DL mean, Diversity Language Committee? What does that mean?
Well, if within the context of our work, as I said earlier, it means making Pacifica a more diverse place.
What does diverse mean?
In terms of race, gender, people, you could define it as those who haven't had access within the society.
Okay, I understand that. And then what we need to do is stop being euphemistic and utilizing the term race, because there's only one race, and that's a human race. We need to say color. It would seem to me. I would just throw that out, and then I will hang up and listen to your very, very important discussion with an issue that is not just that of DAI. And I thank you so much for dealing so forthrightly with it.
Thank you for your call. It's been a pleasure. Good morning. You're on the air? Hello?
Yes, good morning. This is Shantu, and I've been waiting on your call from Rika.
Okay, well, we'll call you back. Okay, Brother Shantu, you want to make an announcement, but we can call you back. Call back on my office line, okay, 2817. I'll talk with you in a second.
2817?
209-2817.
Thanks.
Good morning. You on the air? Hello, good morning.
Oh, 1 second, I have to turn my radio down.
This voice sounds familiar?
Yes, it does.
Okay, so you're listening to WBAI 99.5 FM.
Hi, I'm sorry. This is Sheila Hamanaka calling from Rockland County. I'm a member of the Diversity Language Committee. And, Gail, I just wanted to point out to you that you've been talking about 50%, but Plan B actually does not call for 50% minimums of anybody. It refers to proportional representation. Another thing is that one good point about the language proposed by the Diversity Language Committee is that it calls for, and I don't know if you mentioned this before because I just tuned in, but it calls for extending the period of recruitment for candidates if the candidate pool is not diverse enough.
Yes.
Did you mention that already?
No, we are not mentioning that.
Oh, okay.
Very good point.
Yeah, that's very important because in order for proportional representation to work to the extent that it does, you do need to have a diverse candidate pool. So it gives you a chance to extend the period by 2 weeks twice. So in other words, for a four-week period, you can, let's say, you know, if you look at your candidate pool and there aren't enough Latinos or Asians or African-Americans or LGBT, etc., you can then spend more time, go out and recruit more candidates to run. The other thing is that the language of Plan B and the final draft of the Diversity Language Committee is quite different. You know, if you're looking at a legal document, it might seem, well, one word, what's the difference if you have one word or another word? But we looked at it very carefully, and for example, we took out the word reasonably. The committees of inclusion will decide, you know, whether the candidate pools and the results actually do represent the diversity of the signal area. But if you throw in a simple word like reasonably, it can, you know, what does that mean? It can mean like that's what's reasonable to one person can be unreasonable to another person. So I think that we went through it very carefully. We had numbers of long sessions, and we tried to remove the wiggle room, so to speak, so that, you know, without breaking the law, quote unquote, you know, by setting up quotas for ethnic groups or quotas for women. Nonetheless, we tried to craft language such that, in effect, a red light goes on if there aren't 50%, at least 50% women, which is the demographics of the signal area.
Exactly, Sheila. And I should say that the reason why the extensions were made available is the recognition that when reaching out to a new group, which a community which you don't have enough contact, you have to identify leaders, you have to identify organizations, issues, that those communities will have to be given time to participate properly. Because if you're broadcasting on the air and they're not listening, you're not reaching them. So I'm glad you pointed out.
Right. And I can tell by the questions that some of your callers have asked that people out there aren't really up to speed with what the language of this diversity committee really means, what the bylaws really mean for the people. It's going to make a profound difference out there. If you have a committee of inclusion that says, well, you know, Latinos in New York City are 25% of the population, but wait a minute, they only have 2 hours of programming, 2 hours of public affairs programming. That's not right. And then, you know, the committee of inclusion, the local station boards will have a goal and work towards it. Whereas if you don't have that sort of demographic as a standard to look at, then you might say, well, you know, we really want to include everybody. And, we have two of this, one of those, you know, one of these, you know. So isn't that enough? Isn't that good enough? You know, we're all good people. We're really trying hard, you know. Look, you know, a third of our producers are women, so isn't that enough? You know, blah, blah, blah. Those things, those little things end up being very important, and I want to say that this issue has to be discussed in public. And unfortunately, I don't know if you mentioned this earlier, but one of the things that's going on, it's just politics in Pacifica, is that the supporters of Plan B, led by board member Carol Spooner out in KPFA, want to have a closed session of the Interim Pacifica National Board to vote on bylaws. Bylaws is going to determine the character of this organization. It's going to deal with issues like democracy within Pacifica, diversity within Pacifica, you name it, autonomy of the local stations versus having a top-down centralized control of Pacifica by the national office. People really have the right to know about these issues and to hear open debate about them before they become cast in stone for our organization. Therefore, we are calling, some of us on the Diversity Language Committee, and many people in the public are calling for the National Board not to have a private meeting to pass bylaws, but to wait until August the 15th and discuss it in public at a National Board meeting here in New York City.
Sheila, thank you. We're pretty much out of time, and I hope that we can, within the coming months, have many more discussions with more time available to us with different voices present, also different positions.
Ray, how can people reach the local advisory board?
Well, I don't have the number with me here.
Oh, okay.
I'm sorry.
Can our switchboard operator give them just 209-2800? That's 212-209-2800 and ask the switchboard operator for the number for the voicemail for the local advisory board. We've been joined by Ray LaForest, member of the local advisory board of WBAI, as well as Gail Golden, who's a member of that board. And we've also had the privilege of speaking with Sheila Hamanaka, among our callers, who's on the diversity committee. We want to thank you very much for joining our listeners and us over Wake Up Call. It's 8:51 a.m. This is WBAI New York Peace and Justice Radio. Coming up next, the Shantou Drummers talking about an event that will happen this weekend. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Take care, Gail.
Even though landlord profits are soaring, Bloomberg's Rent Guidelines Board has proposed rent increases of 5.5% and 8.5% this year. It's time for landlords to open their books. Come to the RGB hearing at the Great Hall at Cooper Union, 7 East 7th Street, on Tuesday, June 17th, from 10 a.m. to 10 p.m. to pack the hall and say it loud. Enough is enough. Be at the Customs House, 1 Bowling Green, on Thursday, June 19th at 5:30 p.m. for the RGB's final vote. For more information, call the Metropolitan Council on Housing at 212-979-6238, extension 3. That's 212-979-6238, extension 3.
And you're listening to Wake Up Call. We've had an exciting morning this morning looking at the lives of Medgar Evers and the civil rights movement here in the United States, as well as the movement of South Africa, and the role it will play in spurring activism here in America. We've seen a pan-world movement of people of all colors, and what a better place than here over Peace and Justice Radio to have such discussions. We're coming up next with an announcement of an event that's going to take place this weekend at Coney Island, the tribute to the ancestors of the Middle Passage. This is an annual event that's been going on for several years, and the tradition continues. We will be, if a guest is unavailable, we will go forward. But just know that at Coney Island, it's usually at Beach 16th Street at Coney Island. You can go out there at 12 noon, bring flowers for the ancestors. It's an ongoing tribute. This has been Wake Up Call. Right now, we're going to hear some more of the music of South Africa.
That comes from Namibia and Malawi. There's a train that comes from Zambia and Zimbabwe. There's a train that comes from Angola and Mozambique, from Lesotho, from Botswana, from Swaziland, from all the hinterlands of southern and central Africa. This train carries young and old African men who are conscripted to come and work on contract in the gold and mineral mines of Johannesburg and its surrounding metropoli. 16 hours or more a day for almost no pay. Deep, deep, deep down in the belly of the earth, when they are digging and drilling for that shiny, mighty, evasive stone, or when they dish that mishmash mush food into their iron plates with the iron shower, or when they sit in their stinky, funky, filthy, flea-ridden barracks and hostels, they think about the loved ones they may never see again because they might already have been forcibly removed from where they last left them, or wantonly murdered in the dead of night by roving and marauding gangs of no particular origin. We are told to think about their lands and their herds that were taken away from them with the gun and the bomb and the tear gas and the Gatling and the cannon. And when they hear that choo-choo train, I chuck it and I puff it and I smoke it and I push it and I pump it, crying and I steam it and I chicken and I They always cuss and they curse the coal train. The coal train that brought them to Johannesburg.
This has been Wake Up Call over WBAI Peace and Justice Radio. I'm Sharon Harper. The host is Robert Knight. I want to say thank you to Dred Scott Keyes, who was our early engineer, and to Mark Leosa, who's with us right now. I want to thank Rosalie Hoffman. We also want to thank Ian Forrest, Jordan Foster, and Tim Einenkel, our interns. We want to thank all of our guests this morning. We want to thank Adam Nossiter, who is the author of Long Memory, Mississippi and the Murder of Medgar Evers, as well as the young people who joined us to talk about the Youth Day, South Africa Youth Day celebration. You can listen to us also over www.wbai.org. We thank Errol Maitland, who's away right now at the Grassroots Radio Conference somewhere in Utah. Once again, I'm Sharon Harper. I've been here with Robert Knight. Stay strong, as Bernard White would say, and pay close attention.